from the Providence Journal's commentary team, this is The Insiders with Ed Acorn, digging beneath the headlines to find out more.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Insiders with Ed Acorn. I'm your host, Ed Acorn, the Vice President and Editorial Pages Editor of the Providence Journal. We are pleased to have as our guest today State Representative Patricia Serpa, a Democrat from West Warwick. She has served in the House since 2006, most prominently as the chairwoman of the House Committee on Oversight. From that post, she has looked into serious failures in the administration of state government, including the UHIP computer program, the failures of a company called MTM to transport patients, and most recently, the horrifying death of a child under the oversight of the State Department of Children, Youth, and Families. Before becoming a state representative, she served 6 years on the West Warwick School Committee and is a former public school teacher and administrator. Chairwoman Serpa, welcome.
Thank you, Ed. It's so nice to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Glad to have you here. I'd like to ask you first about the DCYF. And at a recent hearing, you expressed great anger and emotion about the death of 9-year-old Shawnee Rothkeb, who was found lying face down in a bathtub where she had been left hours earlier. This is a travesty. This is murder, you told DCYF head Trista Pakola, who has been a repeated guest on this podcast. What did you mean by that?
Ed, before I made that statement, one of the members of Oversight asked how many adults had been in contact with that family over the years, because that particular foster mother had foster children, I believe it was for 13 years. So a committee member asked Dr. Pakola how many adults touched that family.
Yeah.
Dr. Pakola's answer was dozens of adults having been involved with that family. And when one or two people miss the obvious, that's suspect. But when dozens missed the obvious, I was just furious at that point. And Ed, I contend to this day that there is blood on that department's hands. That was a travesty beyond travesty. It wasn't one red flag. It was multiple red flags.
Well, right. In a 57-page report, child advocate Jennifer Griffith found that the DCYF staff ignored concerns raised by members of the public and even the agency's frontline staff about Ms. Rothkeb's inability to care for Jeanne, who had cerebral palsy, and the other children. And she found it stunning that no one at DCYF who had handled the case had been fired, that no one who had questioned Ms. Rothkeb's listed references, and that there were few inspections of her house and false reports of investigations filed. Perhaps most glaringly, no one had questioned how Ms. Rothkeb could possibly homeschool 8 special needs children. How do you fix that level of indifference to children?
You know, Ed, it's indifference and it's just downright sloppiness. And there's a part of me that thinks it's a culture of protection on the inside. And I do understand from some people on the inside, they're not shy about contacting their elected officials. I do understand from people on the inside that there's one gentleman in particular that they feel is responsible for not seeing the mess there and taking it to another level. But there seems to be a culture of protecting.
Right.
Protection of the workers. And when that was said to me, I said, but who was protecting those children? And during that hearing, I mean, I am a former teacher, a former guidance counselor, so I know a little bit about handicapped children. And I said, had those children not been homeschooled, quote unquote, but had been in a public school, I am sure through an IEP, an individualized educational plan, that they would have had one-on-one attention from either a CNA or even an RN, because all of those children had multiple needs, medical, emotional, educational. Some were autistic, some were nonverbal. Every single child had multiple needs. So it just blows my mind to think that a 55-year-old woman could homeschool 7 or 8 children who, by the child advocate's report, were zipped up in tents to protect themselves from themselves. They would pull out their own hair, pull out their own teeth, hurt themselves, hurt others. That particular mother actually tied kids in cribs so they wouldn't hurt themselves or others. She would tie them for hours on end in high chairs.
This is according to the report.
This is all in that 57-page report. And she did that, too, when she went on errands. She would leave the house because it was, frankly, too much work to pack up eight kids. She would literally tie them up in the house unattended.
So how is this possible?
Ed, that's the million-dollar question. Did everyone just cast a blind eye? And the bureaucratic, putting on my bureaucracy hat, I understand that those types of children are very difficult to place. I get that. But when you've got a woman saying, I'll take another one, I'll take another one, I'll take another one, and I'm not going to pass judgment on what she was thinking for the reasons. I know that they do collect more money for taking handicapped and multiple handicapped children. But if I am an overwhelmed, overworked, frustrated social worker, I guess it's an easy place to drop off a difficult to place child. And I just cast a blind eye when I walk in, drop the child off with his or her bag of clothes and say, thanks very much.
So who do you hold responsible?
I hold the administration entirely responsible for this. And I'm hearing from the workers, and there are dedicated workers. I'm not casting aspersions on them. There are bad apples in every organization, even some of the social workers. But by and large, the ones I've met with want to do a good job. They're very upset by the situation. They feel they have no leadership. They have nowhere to turn. And I don't want to get too wonky because it's confusing to me, too. There are units there. And I think a unit consists of four or five social workers and one unit leader. So that if we're a group of five social workers, we have like a quasi-administrator to go to with an issue or a problem. Now I hear that there are fewer units, and those quasi-administrators are now moved off into other administrative tasks. And when it comes to performing social work tasks, they go back down to the social work who are already overwhelmed. Right. And let's not forget, you know, for the people who are listening to this, you know, I think sometimes people have a limited view of what a social worker does, but many times they act in place of a parent. They'll pick kids up, take them to a doctor's appointment, pick kids up, take them to the ACI to visit a mother or a father, pick kids up, take them to an appointment with a psychiatrist, to the dentist, because the foster parent may have no transportation or may have other kids in the home that he or she cannot leave. So these people often act like parents themselves. And I think the ideal caseload is 14 families per social worker. And that may not sound like a lot, but there's usually more than one adult in a family and multiple children with a variety of special needs. So they are absolutely overworked. They are crying for some leadership there.
And do you hold Trista Pecola responsible?
I do, Ed, and I said that to her at the meeting, that I have not lost my respect and my like for her as a person, but in terms of her leadership ability, I think she failed on this one because, and I don't mean this to be fresh, she's not the new kid on the block anymore. She's been here for a little over 2 hours.
2 years.
2 years. Yeah. I'm sorry, 2 years. And the directors there before her certainly caused their fair share of damage. They piled it on, and she walked into a mess. But some of this still happened on her watch.
Is this just a question of not having enough resources, or is it a question of management?
I do believe it's a management question. And in fact, the minority leader, Blake Filippi, asked Dr. Pecola at that meeting, how can we help you? What do you need from us? Because it was just before the budget. And honestly, she didn't have an answer for us. She talked all around it. She didn't say she needed more people. She didn't say she needed more money. She indicated that she thought the resources that the state allotted her to deal with the situation were adequate. She said, so please just keep funding me so that I can do my job. In fact, we got into a little kerfuffle on the floor during the budget because the minority caucus did want to take some millions of dollars from some other entities that we had already allotted it to. And with that, they wanted to hire 40 more social workers. But Ed, we're all taxpayers first, and I just don't believe in throwing more money at a bad situation. And I think the good news is the most important thing to come out of these hearings on DCYF, we've set aside $500,000 for them to seek a national accreditation. And that means that no one connected from the inside, no one that knows a guy here in the state can come in and look at that agency and say, everything is fine, you're doing it right. So we voted in $500,000 for them to seek national accreditation. And that's probably going to be a two-year process, because for anybody who's been through an accreditation process, either through a school or for a hospital, you really turn the inside out, and every single employee gets to speak to someone from the national level about what's working in the agency, what isn't working, making recommendations, and then in fact they compile their findings and they put together a report. So I expect we're going to get some good information. We are all very concerned that the department is lopsided with administrators, quasi-administrators, and friends of people in higher office. I'll just leave it at that. And they're not doing, frankly, the dirty work of social work. It's not a glamorous job.
Right. So you need people who are actually doing the job out on the front lines.
Out on the front lines. And I learned an interesting thing through this oversight hearing that I didn't know this, but in order to be a social worker for DCYF, you don't even have to have a degree in social work. I said it on the floor. You could have a degree in art history. You could have a degree in philosophy. If you go through jobs or monster.com, they're on a lot of ads for art historians. So you have a college degree. You have student loans to pay. The starting salary isn't bad. The benefits are decent. And Dr. Pakola and the social workers themselves tell us that there's a high turnover rate, because once they get down and dirty and they see what this work involves, you know, being accompanied to a third floor walk up with the police to seize a child, to walk into a domestic violent situation to seize children, it's not glamorous work, Ed. Not at all.
Tough work. Yeah.
Tough work.
Yeah. So do we wait for this accreditation report, or what can we do to protect children right now?
Ed, I wish I could wave a magic wand and tell you I don't know. I know that the child advocate is very concerned about the children who are now in some foster homes, and those homes have not been inspected. And I think that the child advocate told me that there are almost 500 homes that have not had safety inspections. And the child advocate is not so much concerned about lead paint. I mean, that in and of itself is a grievous offense. But just basic safety, running water, hot water, basic cleanliness to reasonable standards. So first of all, they've got to check on those kids in those foster home placements and make sure the placements are decent. Background checks, I think the child advocate told me too that the background checks are lagging. So I'm not sure that we know that all of these adults caring for children should have children.
Yeah. So I guess, what's next with your committee on this?
Well, we're going to be calling them in the middle of the summer. I did indicate that I feared that if I let the hearing of 2 weeks ago be the last hearing until January, that frankly they would put the snooze alarm on and think, well, the General Assembly's on summer break, and we are becoming a full-time General Assembly in many ways. So I'm going to call them in with the child advocate. I trust her implicitly. She doesn't sugarcoat anything, much to the dismay of some people. She doesn't sugarcoat anything. She's in close contact with how the organization is operating. She makes recommendations to Dr. Pakola all of the time, and she did say that Dr. Pakola is pretty good about following through, so I'm going to follow through myself on the recommendations and see if they've been taken care of to Jennifer's satisfaction.
Yeah, that's good. It's our impression that when you throw a spotlight on something, it changes people's behavior.
Unfortunately, they're just like kids when they're not looking. I mean, I certainly spent enough years around kids to know when you think no one's watching and you can get away with it. It's unfortunate. These are what's supposed to be reasonable, educated adults, and they just don't have their eye on the ball. And frankly, the priorities are misplaced. I was a little upset to learn there are 40 unfilled social work positions that we budgeted for last year that were never filled.
Wow.
I fear, I can't prove, but I have a feeling that the money that we budgeted for those 40 positions has been spent, let me just call it, elsewhere. And the priority now in DCYF is to hire a full-time medical doctor for consultation purposes. So the speaker, for $250,000. Wow. So the speaker asked me to call Dr. Pakola and ask her where she found that money in her budget. So I believe she told me that she eliminated a part-time administrative or executive director, and we had two part-time contracts with medical doctors, two consulting contracts for medical doctors part-time. So she eliminated that director, those two medical consultants, and she hobbled the money, $250,000, together for an MD.
Wow.
And honestly, Ed, unless that MD is going to be making home visits, I don't see that as the priority right now.
Right.
So everything is inside out and upside down. That's why we got to get somebody in there and say, this is right, this is right, this needs fixing, this is totally inappropriate, because there's lots of things. And it's had a long history. You know that. You've lived in the state a long time. It's had a long history of dysfunction.
Yes.
But this is it. Baby Toby, that your paper did a story on, that spoke to our hearts. And not to minimize that story, but this was like Baby Toby on steroids.
Right.
That's what I kept thinking.
Just horrific. Just awful.
Awful.
What do you make of the governor's leadership in this area?
I'm painfully honest myself, and frankly, I'm disappointed. I would think that she would react, first of all, as a mother, because I'm a mother and I'm a grandmother, so I try to put myself and think that if that were my child or my grandchild, and I'm just perplexed as to why the governor hasn't been more outraged. And she supports Dr. Pakola. I understand that. That's her hire. And I'm not saying Dr. Pakola is incompetent. But the lack of the governor's emotion, and it's pretty hard to be dispassionate about this issue.
Yeah.
I don't care whether you have children or not, whether you're married, unmarried, whether you're a grandmother, grandfather. How can you be so dispassionate as to not recognize that this is so wrong on so many levels, and it's been this way for so many years?
Yeah. Yeah. Just anyone thinking of that little girl suffering, it's just horrifying. Do you think someone should be charged criminally?
I do. And I was told that I shouldn't say that publicly, but, you know, the Attorney General isn't going to base his action on my opinion. I'm a little legislator. He's not going to base his opinion on his actions on my opinion. Yeah, I think there's plenty of blame to go around. And can indifference and looking the other way result in criminal results? I absolutely have lived long enough. I think so.
Yeah.
Those are called, as the nuns used to say, those are sins of omission.
Right.
And it's just wrong.
Yeah. Who told you not to say that?
Well, I'd rather not say, but
okay.
I was told to keep my private opinions about the legal matters.
Yeah.
But I'm not a lawyer, and I certainly have no influence over the Attorney General, nor would I try to influence him. He's going to do what he's going to do.
Well, I know we suggested that in an editorial. They should look into that, because it seems glaring.
Glaring spotlights.
Yeah.
Spotlights.
Okay, moving on to St. Louis-based Medical Transportation Management. It has inked a three and a half year contract with the state of Rhode Island that pays it up to $115 million to provide transportation for Medicaid clients and the elderly to medical and other appointments. But more than 5 months into the pricey new contract, elderly and needy people are still reporting a litany of problems, long waits, missed appointments, canceled rides. What's your view of the job MTM is doing with this program?
My teacher, in my teacher red pen, on a scale of A to F, I give it a D. I gave it an F. I think they're up to a D. And that's only because we are hearing fewer complaints. But I think that's because people have just given up on trying to use the service. And they're doing the best they can to resort to family members or neighbors to take them to appointments. And that should have not been the epic fail that it apparently has been. They spent either 3 or 4 months here when Logisticare, the previous transportation company, when their contract ran out, MTM spent 3 or 4 months here in the state, quote unquote, getting ready. And again, I'm told from the inside that they really didn't get ready. They were more worried about ordering lunch, going to the mall. And, I mean, you know, we laugh, but then the contract went live January 1st. We came back to session January 2nd. When I tell you I started hearing complaints week one of the new legislative year, and I thought to myself, well, surely people are overreacting. This company needs a few days to get its act together. And then, Ed, it just got worse and worse and worse. I think we were 3 weeks into session, and we had to call them in and say, what are you doing over here? We're getting calls from all over the state.
Right.
People not being picked up, elderly people being left in wheelchairs 3, 4, and 5 hours with no access to the bathroom, which is an assault, never mind on their convenience, it's an assault on their dignity.
Yes.
Think if that were your mother, or I think of my 94-year-old mother, I'd be furious.
Right.
So it's just sloppiness all around. I had a social worker from South County call me. She was working with a young man who was in a group home somewhere in South County, and he is court-ordered to sexual deviancy counseling. He is a sexual deviant. He is court-ordered once a week to go for counseling. She calls MTM to make arrangements for him to get to the counseling center. They don't show up. So she said, Mrs. Serpa, frankly, she said, I could take him back to court because he's not following right. through with his court-ordered counseling. But she said, it's not his fault. And then you have other people on life-saving measures such as chemo, insulin. Well,
sure.
When you're going for dialysis. I mean, those are life saving, critically timed, scientifically spaced that mean life or death to people, and they're not making it to those appointments. So again, it's an epic fail.
Why did it fail?
Well, number one, and nowhere in the real world does this happen, I don't think. When we signed this $115 million contract with them, I asked for a copy of the contract, and one of the first things I noticed with my staff was that there were no performance standards identified in the contract.
Oh,
so
boy.
Here we are entering into a $115 million contract. It said performance standards to be determined later at a later date by both parties. So if we as a state don't know what we want this company to do and how we want it to perform, that's on us. Listen, they're in it for the business. They're in it to make money.
Yeah.
They're not in it to save the world. I mean, there's no altruistic purpose to their being in business. So the fact that we didn't even have performance contracts. And Ed, yeah, and maybe I'm jumping ahead of your interview, but every single problem since I've been on oversight seems to be the result of either technology or a contract. Whether
right.
it was UHIP, whether it was the early days of the Division of Taxation with their new software and people were complaining that they weren't getting their state refunds in time, every single problem has either been through technology or poorly awarded, poorly written, poorly executed, and poorly overseen, or the lack of overseeing contracts in this state. It's like nobody's minding the store, and they think things are just going to automatically run because somebody signed their names to a paper. And that's, in my experience, that has not been the case.
So those two areas, technology and the lack of oversight of these contracts.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
What... Is this governor worse in that area than previous governors you dealt with?
Well, I wasn't chair of oversight under any other governor, and I don't hold her personally responsible, but what she is responsible for is putting people in those seats who do have responsibility for seeing that. I
right.
have to say that the Division of Taxation immediately responded to our concerns.
Right.
They had set their fraud... decibels or their fraud detection decibels too high.
Right.
And that's what delayed people getting their state money back. So, you know, we asked them to kind of make an adjustment so people weren't waiting 8 months, 10 months, and the next year it was fixed. So they responded immediately. But EOHHS, I hate to say it, and it sounds sarcastic, but it's the gift that keeps on giving in terms of MTM, UHIP, now DCYF. There are big problems over in EOHHS.
Which is the Executive Office of Health and Human Services.
Right. Yeah. And that's the office that touches all of us or our family members most personally. Our health, our safety, and our well-being. Whether it's the Department of Elderly Affairs, whether it's DCYF, whether it's Health and Human Services, whether it's BUDA, for, you know, Department of Hospitals, they touch all of our lives at some point in our lives. They oversee the care and the well-being of nursing homes. The nursing homes were having problems, too, right, when that UHIP, and I know I'm jumping all over the place.
No, but tell the listeners about UHIP if they're not familiar, but I'm sure they are.
Oh, I'm sure, I think people have UHIP fatigue,
yeah,
at this point. That was another contract that we entered into, and the federal government said, you're not ready, don't do it. Don't go. Well, in our infinite wisdom, we knew better than the federal government. We pulled the plug, and that was a fiasco. Right. I remember literally three summers ago, or maybe it was four, three summers ago, literally coming in off the campaign trail, because as I was going door to door, my constituents were saying, Pat, there's this new system in place. I can't get my food stamps, or I can't get my cash assistance. And, you know, we get together during campaign season, and we were all hearing it. So I remember calling Speaker Mattiello, and I said, Speaker, it's campaign season, but we got to have a hearing and find out what's going on. And
right,
he kind of laughed. He says, Pat, he said, your colleagues will kill you. I said, well, it's going to be either them or my constituents will kill me. It's like, pick your poison. So I do remember that we came in, and we had a meeting with the Finance Committee, and we lined them all up, and we said, what are you doing here? Why did you pull the plug? It was a colossal failure. And I'm repeating myself. People weren't getting cash assistance. People weren't getting food stamps. And I'm not passing any judgments. And, you know, because there are the naysayers out there. Well, they should get a job. They should do this. They should do that. You know, these are hungry children. These are mothers who need to buy formula for the children. So I'm not going to pass judgment. These are nursing homes that take care of our sick, our
right,
elderly, our handicapped. They couldn't get their money. They were sustaining and caring and paying for patients and their care, paying for their medication, taking them to and from doctor's appointments, paying the CNAs, but they weren't being reimbursed by the state. A couple of them did go out of business. A couple of the nursing home CEOs told me that they mortgaged their own private,
wow,
property to have some cash to play with to pay the CNAs and to stay in business. They were negotiating with the food provider. Can we pay you this month? And then the next month they would pay the cleaning supplier. This is no way to run a railroad.
Is it better now?
It seems to be a little better now after 3 years.
Yeah.
Again, I don't hear as many complaints, thank God. And I've, you know, got some great contacts over there. And maybe because they know I'm just such a pain, they take care of my phone calls right away. But, I mean, this is why we get elected. Certainly not for the
right,
$15,000 a year. It's
right,
it's not glamorous either.
Right.
And, you know, as much as we get bad mouth, I think most of us are here to make a difference, and if we can do something that helps someone, that's my reward. That
right,
I had a little bit to do with making someone's life better. And if I helped a mother get some food stamps so she could feed her kids, I remember I had one mother called me, and she said, Mrs. Serpa, I've won out my neighbor's welcome. They've given me bologna. They've given me bread. They've given me milk. She said, I have no more food.
Wow.
This is the United States of America. I had another mother call me. Her apartment was burned out here in the city before Christmas, and the state was housing her in one of those, like a 24-hour, like a Days Inn. I don't know that it was a Days Inn. The Department of Human Services hadn't paid the rent, I guess. She called me Christmas Eve day that year. She said, Mrs. Serpa, I'm going to be spending Christmas Eve in my car with my two kids because the manager of the 24-hour facility said had your rent paid in 2 or 3 months, and you're going to be out of here this afternoon. And I remember, and it was a Saturday, and I had the then director's cell phone, and I said, I don't care what you do.
Right.
I said, this lady is not spending Christmas Eve in her car with two little kids. She had no family. She wasn't from here originally. And fortunately, she had a car, so they met at the Department of Human Services office, and she had a check for her rent. But I shouldn't have to do that.
Right, right, right. So these two major areas, technology and the management of contracts, what can the legislature do to change that? I mean, I understand it's the responsibility of the administration, but what can the legislature do?
Well, as you know, Ed, we have separation of powers in this state. And when I went campaigning this time, one of my constituents said to me, oh, you've been hollering about UHIP now for 3 years, but you haven't fixed it yet. And I had to explain to him that I personally cannot fix it. I'm not an employee of the state in terms of having an administrative position or having the authority to fix it. All we can do on oversight, in light of separation of powers, as you said, is to shine a light. And what do they say? Sunlight is the best disinfectant.
Yes. Yes.
And when Steve Brown from the ACLU joined with us in filing a suit, and I think he got a special master involved with...
Yes.
Was it the UHIP? And
yes.
Was it some food stamps?
Yes.
And you know, even though it didn't get fixed immediately, I remember Steve Brown and I having a conversation, and he said, Pat, if we weren't paying attention to this, he said, I suspect it would be even worse, and it would take even longer, because people were scurrying to try to get it fixed.
Can the legislature, though, create a position or something that and make them answer to the legislature about management of contracts? Or is it just, look, everybody has to call the governor and say, we got to manage these contracts
better.
Well,
you know what we did do, and I hope the public approves of this action in the budget we passed last week. I know that some have been calling for an inspector general.
Right.
And that creates a whole nother level of bureaucracy and a whole nother expense to taxpayers. So what we did was to empower the auditor general, Dennis Hoyle. We're putting some more money into his office. We're going to expand his office.
Right.
We're going to give him some more employees, and we're going to give him greater authority to go in and look at these contracts. So rather than create a whole nother layer of, and who knows who'll get hired in that position.
Right, right.
Rather than create a whole nother layer of bureaucracy, we're going to empower him, and he makes reports to us regularly, whether it's on the local level. I know I had a problem in Coventry with their sewer department, the fees that the town council was levering. We called him in to do an audit, and the town council sat up and took notice. He audited EOHHS during the UHIP debacle, and people take notice. He makes recommendations, and I asked him. I said, what has been your experience in terms of the administrators of these departments when you make recommendations, especially fiscal ones? And he said, for the most part, they're pretty cooperative.
Yeah.
So that's encouraging.
Right.
So hopefully by empowering him a little bit, people know we mean business, and we're just not going to take this half-baked, lackluster performance. Taxpayers pay good money for services. We have every right to expect not perfection, but a decent level of service. We're all in public service together. And how do we make the state better and more attractive unless we as the public servants all deliver?
Right. Well, Chairwoman Serpa, we're over our time. We could have done 5 of these podcasts,
we can.
I think. So I appreciate you coming in very much, and I wish you well in exposing or shining a light on how our government works.
Thank you, and I'll be back if you invite me.
Great.
Thank you.
This podcast is a production of the Providence Journal, online at providencejournal.com.